And welcome to week 120 of Shmuel. Note, I do expect to have a shiur next week, God willing, but then we'll be off for the following two Thursdays, the Thursday right before Pesach, and then the Thursday during Pesach. So we have a shiur, we have a class on, what is it? I don't remember what today is. Okay, here we go. Today's March 31st. So we have one on April 7th. We're off the 14th and 21st. And then we're back, God willing, on April 28th. Okay. And we are in Perek Chaf Hei, chapter 25. We have been introduced, fortunately or unfortunately, to Naval. We also got introduced to Abigail, which was, you know, a decidedly more positive thing. And we're told about Naval, that he's a rotten guy. Like, we know that right off the bat. He's described in sentence 3 as Ish Kashev Haram Ma'alalim, a hard person, somebody of bad deeds, Vuhu Chalibi, and Chalibi, which could have been descendant of Kalev or Kluvai, but it also could mean dog-like. And the dogs, we talked about how in Shmuel, and in Malachim, the dog is considered a low class, something that you don't want to be associated with. So what we're up to now is Pasuk Dalet, sentence 4, in which David appeals for help. We started on this at the end last week. Vayishma David Bamidbar. David heard from his place in the wilderness. Ki gozeis Naval es tzono. Remember, David is in Midbar Paran, the area down south. We talked about why he went there after Shmuel's death. And he's there because, he hears that Naval is shearing his sheep. And as we're going to see, sheep shearing is cause for celebration. So David is going to look to benefit from that celebration. Vayishlach David asara na'arim. David sent 10 men, 10 youths, Vayomer David la'ne'arim, and he says to them, Alu Carmelo ubasimel Navalu shaltemlo bishmi l'shalom. Go to Carmel. We talked about whether Carmel is a place named Carmel, or it just means the fertile area. Come to Naval, and you should offer him a blessing of peace in my name. That's the beginning of what they're supposed to do. And we actually read it last time, so I'm not going to read out all of the psukim there. One thing I will note, just as an aside, I just noticed it. He says to his youths, Uvasem el Naval. You should come to Naval. The reason I pick up on that is because sometimes in Medrash they pick up on words, and sometimes they do not on the same word. You may recall that Hashem says to Moshe, Bo el Paro, come to Paro. And the Medrash picks up on it and says it should have said Lech el Paro, go to Paro, come to Paro. That sounds like he's saying, I am here with Paro. And so the Medrash says that's exactly the point. Hashem is saying, I'm there, so don't worry, you're coming to me, Bo, as I'm speaking to you from there. However, here he says, Uvasem el Naval, you shall come to Naval, and David is not with Naval. So that's just a side note that I just noticed. But David sends his men to Naval to seek help. And I think we may have mentioned last time that, you remember we saw Midrashim that talked about how David left his family with Moab's king, right? And we saw the Midrashim that said that the king killed them. Right, and we figured out possible sources and possible reasons why the text says that. But I wonder if part of it isn't because he doesn't turn to his family for help. He has a family, they have resources, and he doesn't turn to them. Instead, he's turning to Naval. I don't know. In any case, he sends 10 youths. This seems to be a formal delegation of honor. In general, the way that David approaches Naval is very formal, very etiquette conscious, the whole way through. However, I think we noted last time, if you look at source number 1, the Gemara in Erevin in the Talmud Yerushalmi uses this 10 to define a military camp. We said in the Mishnah in Erevin that there are certain rules for members of a military camp of particular note. They can take wood as needed from anywhere, something that will come up later in Shmuel, actually. And the Gemara there says, how many soldiers does it take to call it a military camp? And Rabbi Yochanan said, 10, based on our story right here. And we're going to come back to what exactly they did in this business of Yanuchu, the whole, source number one, source number two. We're not quite ready for the whole thing. But the way, actually, no, we can read it this way at this point already. David is going to give them a script to say to Naval, and then in sentence 9, it's going to say, Vayavohu narei David, David's youths came, Vayidabru el Naval, and they said to Naval, Kachol advarim ha'ela v'shem David, they said all these things that David told them to say in his name, Vayanuchu. And Vayanuchu is a strange word. Literally, and they rested. You didn't need to tell me that. Tell me that they came, tell me that they gave a speech, and then tell me what Naval's reaction was. So the Yerushalmi picks up on that, and it says, Mahu vayanuchu. What does it mean when it says, and they halted? And Rabbi Yosta Barshona said, Naasu machane. They became as a military camp. Which, in the context, in that Talmud Yerushalmi, means they qualify as a military camp. But what do you mean they became as a military camp? So Rabbi David Frankel, in his Karban HaEda commentary, says in source number 2, V'ramzu l'naval, they hinted to Naval, Hashta, shemutar l'machane l'gzol, kol shkin shehim b'din ba'u l'itol. If a military camp is able to take whatever they need, certainly we have a logical claim to it. We helped the animals, we helped the shepherds, and so on. So therefore, we should be able to take whatever we want. So the Yerushalmi is saying that when David sends 10 youths, it's not a delegation of honor, it's a threat. You have two ways to support my men, David says. Either you can give it willingly, or they can take it. But either way, you're going to provide support. It's hard to fit this into the simple read of the psukim. David really comes off as being very humble and beseeching. But it's a very interesting, different read, no? The idea that this is a threat, veiled or otherwise. In any case, David sends the greeting. And then in Pasuk Vav, in sentence 6, Va'amartem, he says to them, Ko lechai. So I noted for you last time, ko lechai is some form of a bracha, it's some form of a blessing. But what exactly is this blessing? It depends on what the word chai means here. And so I brought you, in source number 3, a table of approaches. The first approach is in the Talmud Yerushalmi, and Rashi quotes it. The Yerushalmi is in Sanhedrin, chapter 2, Halacha Gimel. I didn't bring you the Yerushalmi, I just brought you the table. And that view is, chai means life, right? Which would have been our assumption walking in, right? The chai means life. And what he's saying is, so may it be for your life. So may it endure. Meaning, just like you have all this blessing now from your animals and from all of your work, so too, ko lachai, so too it should be for life. You should always have this kind of blessing. That's the way the Yerushalmi reads the bracha. You follow? Okay? Good. Rashi then brings another idea, which is chai means a person of life, a person of energy. David is saying, ko lechai. This kind of bounty that you have is appropriate for somebody like you, a man of energy. It's a compliment. That's the second approach. Radak says chai means wealthy. And each of the commentators brings support for it. They aren't just saying it at random. Radak says it means the wealthy. So what he's saying is all that you have is the lot of those who are wealthy. Ralbag says chai means this time, this season. If you think of ka'et chaya l'sara bein, right, that the Malachim say to Abraham. So chai means at this time, this season, and he's saying, ko lachai. May it be the same next year at this time. May you also find of wealth next year at this time. I had a fellow who was in my shul in Rhode Island, in my first shul, who when we did Hoshanos on Hoshana Rabbah, or when someone did a special Haftorah, so he would say something in Yiddish, which I didn't quite catch, something like Ibn Ayur, something like that. So should it be next year. That's what this reminds me of. Can one of the Yiddish speakers enlighten me as to how to properly say that?
Ibn
Ayur.
Over a year.
Ah, got it. Okay, thank you. That's the problem when your ancestors come from Western Europe instead of Eastern Europe. The language you don't learn from them is French, not Yiddish. Okay. So that's Ralbag. Ralbag being a very known Yiddish speaker. And then finally, to round out the set, I bring you from Professor Kiel in the Dot Mikra edition. He notes that in Arabic, the word chai may be family, which I was not familiar with. My Arabic isn't that great. It's better, much better than my Yiddish. But he says chai is family. And so what he's saying is, so may it be not just for you, but for your family. So all these different ways to parse what is fundamentally a respectful bracha, respectful blessing that David is offering as his opening words. And then in sentence 7 he says, I've heard that you're shearing the sheep. You should know your shepherds were with us and we did not shame them. They didn't lose anything as long as they were in Carmel. What is the meaning of we didn't shame them? So Radak says, straight read, we didn't harm them. But that's really difficult because honestly, you can't take credit for the fact that we didn't hurt your guys, right? There's like protection money. Since things have been good so far, if you want it to continue, you better help us out. Abarbanel is slightly better. He says, you might have expected we would do bad things, but we didn't. Take a look at source number 4 where Abarbanel makes one of these quintessentially Abarbanel observations about the nature of military people. He says, Shem hayos she'anshei ha'tzava melumdei milchama yal'igu me'ovdei ha'adama v'yishaku me'haro'im. He says, you know, soldiers trained in battle, they tend to make fun of the farmers, and they tend to mock the shepherds. Gam yigzalu mi'adam ma she'yuchlu, and they take from them whatever they want, or whatever they can. V'koshkin b'yosam b'astadeva chutz me'hayishuv, mekom ha'resha, and certainly when they're in a lawless area, they're outside of civilization. Because that's what warriors do. They steal, whether from their enemies or from their friends, whatever they can find. But that didn't happen with your shepherds. So Abarbanel, also along the lines of Radak, we didn't harm them, but at least explaining why I would have thought that they didn't. However, Rashi says, you're reading Hechlamnum wrong. That's not the way to read it. To be machlim somebody is to bring them to shame, but that includes if they ask for something and they are turned down. And that's what he says. Rashi says in source number 5, im nitzrichu lanu l'shum davar, if they needed anything from us, lo hashivonum rekam, we did not turn them back empty-handed. Much like we say in the davening, right? On Rosh Hashanah, we say al tachlimenu. God, don't shame us, meaning by rejecting our pleas. And lo nevosh v'lo nikaleim. Same idea, that we should not be disappointed, that we should not be turned away empty-handed. So that's, Rashi's read seems to me the closest to the character of David and to the story. So he says, you know, we've made sure to provide whatever they needed. And then in sentence 8, he says, I can prove it to you. Sha'alas ni'arecha v'yagidulach. You go ask your youths. See what they tell you. V'yimtzua ne'arim chein be'enecha. And therefore, he says, let my youths find favor before you. Ki'al yom tov banu. Because we have come for help at this yom tov, this good day, this festival that you're having. So give whatever you can to your servants and to your son, David. So in terms of the Yom Tov, The simple read of this is what I said to you 15 minutes ago, which is that the Yom Tov is the celebration that comes when you shear the sheep. They would make a great big festival. It was a whole thing. Remember Yehuda and Tamar, Lagozet Sono, they would go to do the shearing, and it was a big celebration. However, the Gemara in Rosh Hashanah gives you another idea, which is going to play through later on in the story as well, and we're going to see the full Gemara here, even though part of it doesn't make any sense to us yet. Source number 6. We're going to see later in the chapter, I'm going to have to blow the ending, otherwise it won't work. We're going to see later on in the chapter that Nabal finds out that his wife Abigail helped David's men. And he has something which some commentators say is something like a heart attack. And 10 days later, he's dead. So the Gemara asks, why 10 days? 10 days is in the pasuk, it's in the verse. Why 10 days? So, Asar Yamim Maya Beditayu. Yeah, take a look at the pasuk first. It's actually worth it to actually see the verse. It's chapter 25, sentence 38. It says, in sentence 27, it says his heart died in him and it was like stone. And then in sentence 38, it says, and it was, after like 10 days, God struck Nabal and he died. So it sounds like this is deliberate. Right? It's not random, like he had a heart attack and he was sick for 10 days. It's 10 days and then Hashem strikes him. So why 10 days? That's what we want to know. So the Gemara says, Amar Rav Yehuda Marav, Rav Yehuda quoted Rav saying, Kneged Eser Legimos Shenasan Nabal Le'avdei David, because Nabal fed David's men. They got one meal each, total of 10 meals. So therefore Hashem says, I'm going to give him 10 days. That's one approach. Rav Nachman, on the other hand, Rav Nachman, Amar Rabba Bar Ravua, Elu Asara Yamim Shebein Rosh Hashanah LeYom HaKippurim. He says, no, this is Aseres Yimei Tshuva. He has 10 days to repent between Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur. Point being, though, the Yom Tov that we're talking about was Rosh Hashanah. That was when he sent him to his men to Nabal, was because it was Rosh Hashanah. That's what the Gemara seems to be saying. Unless you read it non-literally, but I think you read it literally. Either way, and then I'm going to pause and take questions, but either way, the point that he's making, that David is making, is this is a propitious time for asking for help. This is the time for us to seek your assistance. Abarbanel is very strong in this regard. Take a look at source number 7. Abarbanel says, Lo ayisi shalach l'sh'omimcha davar. Normally I wouldn't send for anything. Ki im lefish al yom tov banu. Except that we've come for the holiday. Rotza lomar, meaning yom goes zimeth tzonecha, the day you shear your sheep. Sha'ata ose yom tov, because you make a feast. Velo tosif, velo tabeh b'avureda b'hotzai, it won't cost you anything. We're going to eat from the food that you're making anyway. Al yom tov banu, we came to benefit from the feast that you're already making anyway. That's Abarbanel. Rav David Altshuler in the Mitzudat David is stronger than that. He says, not only will it not cost you anything, but this is a known thing. You circulate and ask, and people give. Right? Like Matanos Levionim on Purim, you're always supposed to give to those who ask you on Purim. So, Vitziva David Le Morlo, David told his men to tell him, Halo Ayom Tov Banu, we have come due to the holiday. When it's appropriate for you to receive everybody pleasantly. That's Mitzudat David. Finally, Malvin says even stronger. One appeal is, it's a Yom Tov, it won't cost you anything, you're making stuff anyway. Second is, you're supposed to be giving to all those who ask, and be pleasant to all those who ask. And then a third approach is Malvin. He says in number 9, Achar sha'mishteh azos hu ba'avur haro'im, v'heim b'chlal haro'im. He says, look, you're making this feast for your shepherds. We are your shepherds. We've been taking care of your animals and your men. Ki heim ayu ikar b'shmiras hatzon. They were the essence and guardian. This is our Yom Tov. Al Yom Tov banu for ourselves. This is our Yom Tov. We have every right to take it. So that's what David tells his men. To say, we didn't shame them. First, I give them a bracha, right? You see what I mean when I say that there's a protocol here. He opens with a very nice blessing, kol lachai. He continues to say, my men, give your men whatever they needed. And then he says, it's a Yom Tov. It's a Yom Tov. Yom Tov, and therefore it won't cost you to help us. Yom Tov, and therefore you should be helping all who ask. And Yom Tov, it's our Yom Tov, because we've been like your very own shepherds. You just didn't hire us, that's all. But we've been very helpful. Questions and comments? Yes, Sandra.
I'm not understanding. David and his people were not in this part of town. Like, judging on what they said after he encountered Shaul, was only after that he went to this area. So how can he say or at what time did he help out Nabal and his flock?
Right. It's an interesting point. There definitely have to have been months that passed, or else this doesn't make any sense. The Midbar Paran was, as you noted, far from where David had been before. David had been near Hebron, Yam HaMelach, that area, and now he's gone all the way down to Midbar Paran. So the answer has to be that some period of time has passed since Shmuel's death, and now this event takes place, which explains, you could use that to explain why we were so confused about juxtaposing Shmuel's death with this story, right? Time has elapsed. There are months that have gone by. You didn't need to put them together. Otherwise the whole claim of having help makes no sense. I think you're right. I think we have to assume that months have gone by.
Unless Nabal had different farms and David and his men held in a different location. But is there any source for anything like that?
No, we explicitly were told where his stuff was, right? He lived in Maon and his stuff was in
Maon. I'm just trying.
Yeah. No, but I think you're right. I think months have passed by. Yeah, Linda.
Thank you.
I think it's interesting in Pasuk Vav, he goes on and on about you should have peace and everything. And it sounds to me like overkill. Mm-hmm. So it really is a threat. You know, you should have peace, but if you cross me, you won't have peace.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think you're right. And I think that's part of why Radak and Abarbanel go the route that they do in reading their, you know, a quasi-hostile element when he says, lo hichlamnum. You know, not reading it the way Rashi does, we didn't turn them down, but reading it as, you know, we didn't do the violence we could have done. Yeah. The whole story is going to be like that, meaning hopefully before we're done today, we're going to see David decide to go on the march militarily against Nabal. Like, there's a lot of force here on David's side. Yes, Ruth.
Is David sort of now becoming a bit more king-like, asserting his authority.
Mm-hmm. I think he is. I think you're right. We haven't really seen David relate to anyone other than Shaul in a long time, right?
Yeah.
Other than, you know, a conversation here and there with Yonatan. The last person that we saw David engage with who wasn't Shaul, well, there was Achish, right, the Plishti king. There was the king of Moab, when he left his family there. There was the momentary conversation in Nov, in the Mishkan, back in chapter 21. But it's been a long time since we've seen him in just a plain old civilian context. I don't even know when we saw it. Right? Back in chapter 17, he killed Goliath. You know? Like, you know,
after that, he was in a position of weakness, really. He was in trouble.
Right.
And even now he's in trouble, but maybe he's feeling he's got some...
Yeah, I don't know.
More authority.
Well, he's certainly doing that.
Yeah.
He's gonna authority all over Nabal. Yeah. Okay. So let's take a look at sentence 9, because we're going to see one word, which we already noted earlier, which may be the most important word in this entire passage. Vayavo narei David. Again, David's youth came, and they told Nabal all the things that they were supposed to say in the name of David, so he knows exactly where it's coming from. Vayanuchu. And then you get that word, and they rested, and they halted. So the simple read of that word is, and they stopped talking. Right? They spoke, and then they stopped speaking. Okay, but what does that teach? So what? So three different schools of thought. If you look at your sheet at source number 10, I broke it down into three major approaches, each of which has sub-approaches. The first approach is going to be that this word teaches me good things about them and how they carried out their mission. The second approach is going to be that it's to teach bad things about Naval. And then the third approach, interestingly, is that it will explain or justify Naval's reaction. Watch how it works. First of all, the approaches that say that this word is here in order to teach good things about them. So that's Rashi and Radach say it's teaching us that they were exhausted, that they rushed to do David's bidding. They did what they were supposed to do, and only afterwards did they halt. These were Zrizim. These are people who are energetic. They carry it out. They do what they're supposed to do, and then they stop. It's sort of reminiscent of Abraham's servant, right? When Abraham sends his servant to go get a wife for Yitzchak, right? So he gets to the house, and they put the camels in and all that, and they say to him, come, have a seat, eat, and he says, I can't. He says, I can't sit down until I get to tell you what I'm supposed to tell you. Right? Remember that? He's not willing to rest until then. That's what they are. That's what they're like. So we're saying something really nice about them. They did, you know, they were committed to the mission. Malbim also says it's saying something good about them, that they didn't change or add anything. They said all the things David told them to say in David's name, and they stopped talking. That's what Malbim says. Right? That's a trait that we wish more people had. You say what you're supposed to say, and that's what you say. So that's your first school of thought. This isn't really about the story as much as it's just about David's youths. Second, which is nice, because we've said some not nice things about David's youths in the past when they wanted to kill Shaul and they were a lower class, like, oh, these are good people. Second school of thought is that it teaches bad things about Naval. If you take a look at source number 11, I brought you Abarbanel. Abarbanel quotes the Mori Nebuchim, quotes the Rambam's approach in his Guide of the Perplexed. I'm going to stop short of Abarbanel's own words. I just want to show you what he says from the Rambam. V'kasef ha'mav harav ha'more, the Rambam in his Mori Nebuchim wrote, Sheperushau amdu midaber. That Vayanuchu means they stopped speaking, right? Like we've said so far. But what does that mean? Lahagid shalom amru od dvarim acherim yumachayvim umachrichim lenaval hashivam kashot. It means they didn't say any additional things which would have caused Naval to respond harshly. That's the idea. The Vayanuchu means they didn't push Naval by adding harsh words. Now that actually fits with something we're going to see next in this chapter. Starting in sentence 15, we are going to see Naval's men tell Naval about all the wonderful things that David's men did in taking care of the sheep, right? They were a wall for us by day as well as at night. Nothing bad happened to us. They're very strong in saying that David's men were good to them. So I'm just looking at one other thing in the parak. I have a note for something else. I just want to check. No. Okay. So Naval's men say much more than David's men did. The point being that they're not pushing. Vayanuchu, they stopped. They weren't pushing. Let Naval's men tell him instead. So that's one approach. It teaches me, Vayanuchu teaches me a bad thing about Naval. They didn't push, and yet Naval was hostile. Ralbag says, You've got the order wrong. He says Vayanuchu actually means they halted before speaking, which is kind of funny. I don't see how you really fit that in the verse. But he says they rested and waited for just the right time before speaking, and yet Naval rejected them. That's the way Ralbag reads it. So your first school is Vayanuchu is nice things about David's men. They rushed to do their mission. They didn't add anything to the text. Your second approach is it teaches me bad things about Naval, that even though they didn't push him and even though they waited for the right time, nonetheless, Naval reacted harshly. Third school of thought is that this explains Naval's reaction. Vayanuchu. So we already saw the Gemara in the in source number 6, which said that Naval gave them each a meal. Right? That's Vayanuchu. He fed them a meal. He's not such a bad person. That's number one. Number two, they imposed on Naval. And now take a look at what Abarbanel does in source number 11 after he quotes you the Rambam. He says, if you're following the English, it's the middle of the second English line to me. The Hebrew, it's the end of the first line. Ve'efshar etzli lefaresh, I think you could explain, Vayanuchu, shenachu me'amal haderech, they rested from the strain of the journey, she'achrei shedibru advarim ha'ele, right after they said these words, miyad, immediately, Vayanuchu v'moshavo shel Naval, they rested in Naval's house, kilakhu chazka babayis, v'samu sham klehem kodim she'ashivim davar. They took hold of the house. They established themselves like they live there before Naval could even respond. They plunked their stuff down, they plopped themselves down on the couch, and they asked someone to bring them some wine. Like that's the way Abarbanel describes it. V'haya Naval charapo, and Naval was angry. L'vishabo asan arim yachad, you have these 10 youths who show up all together. Remember, you could read that different ways. V'ra'o sam rabim, he saw there were many of them. V'chara apo, and he was angry. Gamkin, l'fi shachanu b'beiso, kodim shiadu tshuvaso. They're camping out in his house before they even know his answer. How dare you? And that also fits with the Rishalmi that we saw. They established themselves as a military camp. So within this school of thought, you actually see Vayanuchu as justifying Naval's annoyance with this delegation. You follow? Three very different ways to take this one little word that's sitting there at the end of their speech. So, to summarize, and then I'll take questions and comments. David formally appeals for help on the basis of the Yom Tov celebration, which may be Rosh Hashanah or the Shearing, and on the basis of his past support for Naval's men, as well as his non-aggression towards them. According to most reads, the text emphasizes the goodness of David's delegation and how Naval should have been willing to help, but there may be mitigating elements in that he gave a meal and in the way that the delegation imposed on him. That's where we are at this point. Questions and comments? Nope. Ruth, did you want to say something?
No.
Okay. All right. So let's go further. Yeah, Claudette. You're muted.
This sounds like a modern day diplomatic corps, like these guys that went to Naval are David's diplomats, and he sent them with carrots and sticks to get what he wants.
Yeah, could be. It could be. You could very easily read it that way. I mean, he has this nice blessing for him, and, you know, so may it be for you next year and all of that. And at the same time, here are these 10 strapping young men who are showing up in your house as a military camp. Yeah, you could read it that way.
And also, Naval had a bad reputation, so he was kind of expecting a negative response.
That's a good point. Does David anticipate trouble? Because everybody knows Naval, and we will see, everybody knows Naval. His wife is going to say so. So maybe David anticipates trouble, and that's why he sends it that way. Could be. Could be. Okay. So, Let's see what happens. Let's see Naval's reaction. Pasuk Yud. Vayal Naval es Avdei David. Naval declares to David's men, Vayomer, and he says, Mi David, Umi ben Yishai. Who's this David person? The son of Yishai. Hayom Rabu Abadim Hamisparzim Ish Mipnei Adonav. You know, there are all these slaves today who are breaking out from before their masters. What is all these upstarts? V'lakachti es lachmi v'es meimai v'es tivchasi. I'm going to take my bread, my water, my meat, asher tavachti the goat's design, which I slaughtered for the people who sheared my sheep. V'nasati la'anashim asher lo yadati eimi zehema. I'm going to give it to these men who knows where they're from. That's Naval's rude response. Two problems with Naval's response. First of all, what Naval doesn't do. He didn't consult his men. Right? Remember the message said, go ask them. He doesn't bother. He has no interest in hearing anything that will support helping David. I don't want to hear my shepherds say nice things about them. I have no interest in supporting them, number one. And number two, aside from ignoring David's goodness to Naval, he's ignoring David's status. Rav Bazak, writing on this chapter, notes, even if you don't believe that David helped your men, David killed Goliath. He led Shaul's troops. He saved Keilah from the Plishtim, from the Philistines. He's not a nobody. You know, you're ignoring who David is. And that's really interesting as well. So he says, there are lots of upstarts. Rashi says that what he's actually saying is, David is from Ruth the Moabite. I think Rashi may be picking up on the fact that he calls him Ben Yishai. I think that may be part of what Rashi is picking up on. Don't know. Radat takes the more simple approach. Hey, he rebelled against Shaul. Of course, saying of David, who is Ben Yishai, is an insult we've seen before. Shaul and Doeg called David Ben Yishai. One other note in here, I haven't seen anybody comment on this, but he talks about the Avadim who are mitpartzim against their graders. David is, like Naval, from Beit Peretz. Right? From the house of Peretz. Peretz was the one who broke forth from the womb. Right? Zerach was supposed to be the older brother, and then Peretz jumps out first. So I don't know whether there's anything to say about that. Is he alluding to David's ancestry? I don't know. But this is his harsh response. What does David do? Ha! Take a look at Pasuk Yud Beis. Vayachu narei David ledarkam. David's youths do not bargain. They don't push. They turn around and they go home. Turning around, according to Malba, means they don't even eat anything. I don't know if he's disagreeing with the Gemara that said that Naval gave them 10 meals, or saying that he gave them the 10 meals and they didn't eat. I don't know. But they turn around. Vayashuvu vayavo vayagidu lo k'chol advarim ha'ela. They returned. They came. They told him all of these things. Rapid fire. Vayashuvu vayavo vayagidu. There's nothing going on, but immediately coming back and telling David, this is what happened. Vayomer David la'anashav, and David said to his men, Chigru ish harbo. Each of you, gird yourselves with your swords. Anyone remember where that pasuk shows up elsewhere? Nope. In Chumash. Here, no, I don't think so. I think at the end of Balak, when the Jews are following Peor, I think we get Chirgu, hang on. No, that's Chirgu Ish Anashav. That's not it. Sorry. That's not Chirgu Ish Eschabav. Okay. So he says, each of you gird your swords, vayachgiru ish escharbo, and each one did, vayachgor gam David escharbo, and David girded himself with his sword as well, vayalu acharei David kerbameos ish, like 400 men follow David, Umasayin, Yashvual, Akelim, while the other 200, remember he's got 600 total? The other 200 stay back with the supplies, whatever supplies they currently have. Okay, so a few notes here. First of all, David takes 400 men to attack, leaving 200 with the Kalim, and David girds his sword, and he's listed as doing so last. So Radak says, if you take a look at source number 12, he says, Ava pisha yadaiba anashim asherimo, it would have been enough for David to just send his men. He didn't need to do this. Ava bichin merok kaso chagar gamhu escharbo, but he was so mad that he girded his own sword as well. We're going to see a different approach to why David is listed separately below, but that's a first approach. I was really surprised to see that you needed 200 to guard the Kalim. Like, what do you have there? You know? But we're going to see the same split later on when David's men, later in chapter 30, go to war. And you will find that 400 men go to war and 200 stay behind. And it's going to be a thing because David is going to give everybody shares of the proceeds evenly, those who stay back and those who went. So we'll have to talk about that when we get there. But the same 400, 200, I guess the answer is yes, you really need 200 to stay behind. I don't know. But of course, what comes to mind when you see David going to battle with 400 men? What comes to mind? Esav.
He's a leader.
Well, and maybe a leader, but Esav, right? Esav has 400 men coming to Yaakov, and that's what we're told scares Yaakov into realizing, hey, the Esav's still mad, right? V'arbameyos yishimo. So, makes him Esav-like. So once we've seen more of this chapter, we're going to have to come back to the Esav comparison. Is this really Esav-like, what he's doing in attacking Naval? But before we talk about why David does what he does, I want to talk about why Naval does what he does. Why did Naval refuse David? Yeah, Ricky.
Maybe as you said earlier, David was against Shaul and he didn't want to be in the same camp.
He doesn't want to be an ally to the rebel. Could be.
Against the king.
Right. Consider what happened to Nov, right? Maybe he's afraid that what happened to Nov could happen to him too. That could be. Claudette and then Sandra.
I was thinking of along the same lines, but I was thinking also that Naval, seeing his name for what he is, that he's this kind of a person that doesn't give up things. He just didn't want to help.
Right, so that was the clear implication, I think, in the psukim, in the text, is Naval is kasher rama alalim. He does bad things. Naval's not the guy who's going to reach out to help somebody. Sandra?
I think you mentioned a couple of weeks ago that Naval felt superior to David in terms of lineage.
Right.
Perhaps he felt that he should be the melech as opposed to David, similar to Korah.
Right. So for sure, that's the message that we're getting in that Yerushalmi that Sandra's pointing out, which said that Naval sees David as a rival and an inferior one. So that's for sure. But in comes Abarbanel. And here I want to stress something from a methodology standpoint. Abarbanel wants to make sure that we don't come away with a one-dimensional view of Naval. And this is important in Tanakh as a whole. Those of you who did Eov with me will remember we had a discussion about Eov's visitors. Right? We talked about how Eov is so mad because what Hashem is doing to him, or allowing Satan to do to him, whatever you want to explain there, is unjust. It's undeserved. And Eov lashes out. He says, this isn't right, this isn't just, I don't deserve this. And along come three visitors and give him different versions of God knows what he's doing. Whether it's Eliphaz saying whatever God does is just and you must have earned this, or whether it's or whether it's the approach of Bildad, you know, that it may be hurting now, but it's leading you to better things in the end, or whether it's God has a plan that is deep and you can't possibly fathom what God is doing so far, type of an approach. They all come in with their approaches. And when we read it, we noted that it's very easy to caricature Eov's visitors because we know they're wrong. Meaning, the book explicitly told us Eov is suffering without having earned it. Eov is suffering even though he doesn't deserve it. That's the point of the book. So there's a temptation to just caricature the men who come to visit Eov. Take a look at number 15, please. I don't know why I put it in source 15. I have to move it back because it should have been source number 13. But in any case, this is from the book that we used a lot of when we learned Eov, from Professor Carol Newsom, The Book of Job, A Contest of Moral Imaginations. She says regarding Eliphaz, his statement that if people are suffering, they must have done something wrong. Yet if such statements were intended as universal, exceptionless claims, only a deluded fool could believe them. If Eliphaz were really saying people only suffer if they've done something wrong, and if they haven't done anything wrong, then their world is roses, he says only a deluded fool could believe that, and whatever the friends may be, they are not fools. And that, to me, is the key line. What we're going to see in Abarbanel here is an unwillingness to read people in Tanakh as one-dimensional or as a caricature, right? Like Ahasuerus's actions in Megillas Esther. It's really easy to read Megillas Esther and make fun of Ahasuerus, he's a buffoon. But the Gemara doesn't do that. The Gemara gives you backstory on Ahasuerus to show you what he was trying to accomplish, and it debates, was he good at it or was he bad? Was he Chacham or was he Tipesh? But there's a strategy. Even if he's a tipesh, he's not. It just means that he's not good at his strategy. But there's more going on. There are places in Tanakh where there is a parody of something. There are places in Tanakh where there's somebody who has only a one-dimensional role to play, right? Like Eov's wife. She's there in the book to say six words to him, and then that's it. We never see her again. We didn't see her before that. But I would view that as a last resort read. Normally, you have to ask yourself, why is this person doing what they're doing? And that's what Abarbanel does here. Take a look, please, now at source number 13. Eventually, it'll be 14. You remember the way Abarbanel works. He introduces each section with a list of questions. And then he goes to the section, and as part of his comments, he answers his questions. So this is his first question on our chapter. He says, he says, why did Naval respond so harshly to David? David's words were good words. David's words were conciliatory words. Why did he respond with words that were as harsh as sinews? He should have given David from the food he had prepared for the men shearing his sheep. Hama'at imrav, whether give him less or give him more, kasher levavo, whatever he wanted to do. Va'av sheyia isha yoser kili sheba olam, even if he were the most stingy person in the world, lo yimshoch yado mites because his eight so no lechem v'mayim l'shalim imenu b'tachanunim, he is not going to withdraw his hand from giving the shearers of his sheep bread and water, right? When people plead, would you please give? Naval is not entirely irrational. He knew who David was. He knew David was anointed as king, and we've had this discussion over and over, who knows and when they know. But the assumption seems to be by now that everybody knows. How in the world could he say such things about David? How could he call David an Ebed who's breaking forth against his master? Abarbanel is uncomfortable reading this as simply Naval's a bad guy. It's not that Abarbanel thinks Naval is good. He does not. Regarding the name Naval, Abarbanel said that he may have had this nickname because he had bad traits and people called him that. But Abarbanel can't believe that someone would just be so repellent in responding to David's appeal. That far, he's not willing to go. So he says, I need to figure out why Naval reacted the way he did. And so he comes up with source number 14. Vachshov ani. He says, you know what I think? Shenaval lo diber klal leneged kavod David. He says, Naval was not talking against David's honor at all. Ki yadash Mashiach Hashem hu v'chosein lamelech. He knew David is the anointed one of God and David is the king's son-in-law. V'lor amar alav avadim amit partzim. When he said there are lots of servants around who break out against their master, he wasn't talking about David. Ki amal anashav. He was talking about David's men. V'zeu mi David umi ben Yishai. And that's what he means when he says, who is David? Who is the son of Yishai? Ritzalomar mi David umi ben Yishai eino kiim ish echad. What Naval means is, who is David? Who is the son of Yishai? He's just one man. Why should I feed everybody? Because he's just one man. Abal ime yoshu ben Yishai umisnaseli mor ani am lo. With him being the son of Yishai and elevating himself, saying, I am going to be king, lo yisi chosheish lazet, that wouldn't disturb me. Vayisi sholeach lo bar v'lechem umazon k'fi atzeruch k'vodo. I would send him grain, I would send him food, as needed for his honor. Aval ma ese, ki rabu ha'avadim. But what am I supposed to do? He's got all these servants. Rotzalomar anashav ha'alchim ito, sheim avadav, shekulam mispartzim, ish mipnei adonav, Shem Sheshmeos Ish Rabim Hain. He says, the problem is the men that go with him. There are so many of them, each one breaking out from his master. You've got 600 men. There are way too many. Vamorel Zeshinaval lo diber keneged David ki imaneged anashav. And he says, I'll prove to you that Naval is not talking about David. He's only talking about David's men. Humash amara nar la Abigail. Look what the youth is going to say to Abigail. One of Naval's men is going to say, Vanashim tovim lanu me'od. The David's men were very good to us. Choma haya aleinu. There were a wall upon us. So he defends David's men, not David. V'lo diber me'inyan David. He didn't talk about David at all. L'fish Naval lo itiach tverim negdo kim neged anashav. Because Naval's refusal was not about helping David. It was about helping David's men. And we saw this approach to Naval before. When on the word Vayanuchu, Abarbanel said, the 10 men plopped themselves down in his house, provoking Naval. So Abarbanel says, Naval is not entirely in the wrong. He's wrong, and he's a bad guy, but don't kid yourself, he's being provoked. These guys plop themselves down in the house, and they come to him saying, support all of us. He just wants to support David, that's all he's willing to do. Questions and comments? Yes, Eti.
How does Naval know that David is the anointed one?
So, we've talked about this before in terms of who knew what and when they knew it. We had one view that said Shmuel kept it quiet, but when he died, that's when people found out. But we also saw that it said that Shaul found out that Noda David was becoming known. We don't have a verse that tells us explicitly when this is happening. We do have events that seem to indicate it. The fact that Shaul is pulling out his entire army to pursue David, like, word spreading about this guy. It's not like it's a secret at this point. Yeah, Claudette.
What Abarbanel just said, I'm a little bit uncomfortable because when he learned that Abigail had given David food, he had a heart attack.
Yeah.
This means that, you know, he was so upset that he had a heart attack.
Yeah. Now, Abarbanel is not redeeming Naval's character. He still believes that Naval is bad. The text said so, and Abarbanel commented on it. But what he is saying is that there is still, he's still in bounds as a rational human being.
Redeeming quality for him to be
I mean, just a mitigating factor that could explain why he's doing what he's doing. I have to say, for myself, I like his approach of reading Naval as multidimensional, not just, you know, bad guy won't help. But I have to say, it's very hard to fit his read into the words. When Naval responds, "Mi David, umi Ben Yishai," who is David, who is Ben Yishai? It doesn't sound like he's saying, "I'm okay feeding David Ben Yishai." That's not what it sounds like to me. But I like where he's going. I think the methodology point is important. Ricky.
It's no surprise that Naval doesn't want to help. Does he need an excuse?
Ah.
So that guy, he's rich, he can do what he wants. So
that's where we're going. Because we now have a problem. The problem is what we read in, which Pasuk was it? Pasuk Yud Gimel. David tells his men, "We are going to war." Really? For what? I mean, at the end of the day, he didn't hire you. You went to his property, you did what you did, and now you're mad that he won't pay you. But, yeah, on what grounds do you do this? It doesn't make any sense. It's not as though, yeah, we have a halacha. It's true. If I own a piece of land, and somebody comes along on his own and improves the land, I have an obligation to pay him. I have to pay him the lesser of two possibilities. You calculate what the guy had to invest to improve it, and you calculate the quality of the improvements, how much they increased the value of the field. And I, as the owner of the field, have a duty to pay him the lesser of those two. Okay. But let's say I refuse. He doesn't get to go to war against me, he can go to Beis Din. Like, what in the world is David doing going to battle against Naval? It's a really strange thing for David to do. So we're going to see two approaches. Approach number one is the approach that the Gemara in Sanhedrin takes. Take a look, please, on your source number 16. Sanhedrin Lamed Vav Amud Aleph. It's talking about Dine Nefashos, how a court handles capital cases. Capital cases have 23 judges, as opposed to a standard financial case, which is supposed to have 3. And we're told, Dinei Nefashos Matchilin Min Hatzad. When the judges weigh in with their view, you start from literally the side. And what it means is, based on the way the judges sat in the Sanhedrin, it means you start from the least of the judges. You have the lowest ranking judge weigh in first. That's a Mishnah. So the Gemara comments on that and asks, Minohani Mili, how do we know that rule? Where'd you get that idea from? Why is that true? Two answers. Amar Rabbi Yaakov Bar Papa Amar Kro. Rabbi Yaakov Bar Papa quotes a pasuk, Lo Sa'ane Al Riv, in Parshat Mishpatim. Do not answer upon the Riv. In context, that means don't respond to a quarrel by following the majority if the majority is wrong. However, the way that we're taking it here is, Lo sa'ane al rav. Do not answer upon the rav, upon the great. Meaning, if a greater judge already answered and gave one answer, you aren't going to be able to disagree. So therefore, you speak first. So the way it worked in these courts was that the lower judges would vote first and work their way up so that they wouldn't have the problem of being afraid to contradict their superior. That's one approach. But then you get Rabbi Bar Bar Chana quoting Rabbi Yochanan using our verse. Vayomer David la'anashav. David said to his men, "You gird yourselves with your swords." Each one girded himself with his sword, and then David also did it. The Gemara is saying that what happened here was not David saying, "Saddle up, we're going to go attack." This was actually a vote. It was a Beis Din proceeding. It was a court. And David voted last. So says the Gemara. Which is going to lead us to ask a question. What is the charge? What's this? What capital crime has Naval committed? So God willing, next week we will resume with that. and we will see the trial of Nabal, as well as another idea for why David went on the warpath, and then we'll start on Abigail's response before we take 2 weeks off for Pesach. Okay, thank you very much, everyone.
Thank you.
But we do have a shiur this coming Thursday. I hope you'll be there. Be well.
Thank you. Thank you, Rabbi.
Thanks. Oh, Etty?